But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I'm not being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So we're back for a preview show, lads. We obviously didn't do a show on Monday. As everybody knows, the nightclubs opened up this weekend and I couldn't get Niall and Lee out of bed on Monday morning to do a show. Only joking, but the nightclubs were open, Niall, and you were one of the brave souls that got into the queue to get into Coppers and didn't get in because you weren't there early enough.
Yeah, I tried my best, in fairness, there on Saturday night, but there was no luck. The queue was gone miles out the road, so I just went back to the house and had an early night.
I'm sure you did. Like this Saturday night, Lee, on RTE, we see Dromore and Trillick game. I have to say, like, Trillick are basically the consistent team in Tyrone. They've won it, they got back to the final, lost on penalties to Dungannon, and now they're looking to get back to the final as well. In another county, this would be like a 10 in a row consistency.
Yeah, they're absolutely brilliant. They beat Killy Clougher very comfortably as well, which a lot of people didn't see coming. They won 3-14-1-6, I think it was. That game went to a draw last year, so it just shows that, you know, right, they're still improving and they're still driving forward. Matty Donnelly, we thought he might be injured for the game. They were very quiet about it, but he played the full thing. Lee Brennan up front, but it was actually Rory Brennan who got the goals on the day. Two goals from halfback, very impressive. But they're coming up against a Dromore side that have all the momentum. Dromore beat Arbow by 2 points in the preliminary round. They beat the defending champions, Dungannon Clarks, in extra time. And then they beat Eglish, who is Conor McKenna, by 2 points, I think it was last weekend. Just, you know, so that little bit of grit and determination and belief, you know, it's very much how the Clarks won it last year, just with that sort of, you know, never giving up. The sponsor or the hashtag for the Tyrone Championship this year is hashtag refuse to lose. And Dromore seem to have adopted that, you know, for their very own. And it'll lead to a very exciting game, I think, yeah.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. I saw the highlights of that, actually. Killy Clougher got it back to nearly a draw at halftime and then got destroyed. Rory Brennan's last goal was a fantastic finish. That was a surprise, considering that they drew it last year. Roscommon, Niall, football final is Clonagale. They're the kind of big, you know, traditional team in Roscommon, and Padraig Pearce's, who won it 2 years ago and lost last year's final to St. Bridget's. This is kind of like Liam Kearns versus Pat Flanagan. They're doing well, the clubs in Offaly, you know, or the clubs in Roscommon, attracting these high profile managers.
Yeah, and two absolute fanatics of men as well. Like, I was reading about Pat Flanagan this morning, and he's like Davy Fitzgerald. He's been coaching teams since 1995. Like, and he's a great record with other clubs as well. He won a county championship in Westmeath with Tyrrell's Pass, and he's an Offaly man. He won with his club Clara as well. But yeah, it looks like it's kind of a, you'd be excited to see the sort of the battle on the sidelines as well. But Clonagale are obviously the most successful club in Roscommon. They've like won 21 titles. But Pearce is now, this is their third final in a row. And I know that they lost last year. And after that, then it's kind of, you know, it might be something that's kind of been in their heads, like, because that was the first one that they ever won, yeah, in 2019. But they've a good young team. They're missing Conor Daly. He was suspended in the semi final. But they've three Daly brothers on the team, and Hubert Darcy as well. And Clonagale, they've won in 2013 and 2018. They've Ulton Harney, and Kieran Lennon is the main scorer up front. So it should be a good game.
Yeah, Conan Doherty's favourite player is Hubert Darcy.
That's the one.
Yeah, Conan's always a big fan of his. Yeah, so keep. I don't know what it is about Roscommon football. I don't want to be disrespectful, but when St. Bridget's are knocked out, my interest in Connacht football kind of, it wanes a little bit. I don't think, maybe it's because the other teams haven't done anything in recent years. It's been all St. Bridget's doing it in the Connacht club and winning an All-Ireland. Obviously, Coola Kilmacud is the big one. That's on TG Cahir as well. So the first one on TG Cahir is the Roscommon one. Then 3:45 is Coola Kilmacud. This is obviously a big one. Coola struggled over Ballyboden. You say that's okay, Ballyboden are a big team, but they also struggled over St. Bridget. So maybe they haven't caught fire.
I suppose you can only beat what's in front of you as well. And like Kilmacud Crokes, they haven't won a final since 2014. So like it's been a long time coming for them, for a team that have such talent as well, Wooly. And like they've lost two finals to Coola in, I think it was 2016 and 17. Like, so, you know, they'll be eager to kind of to get one over on Coola this weekend. Like, they've lots of great players. Like, they've Ronan Hayes and Alex Considine. They're calling them the Twin Towers up front. Two big men and, you know, great target men to hit the ball into. And they've Oisin O'Rourke as well, a very good player for Dublin. But yeah, Coola, as you said, maybe they haven't caught fire, but they're still winning those tight games, which is a great sign of a team, really.
Yeah, exactly. And Eddie Brennan on the sideline, obviously, he's in there coaching this year. The Tipperary, before we move into a little bit of Congress chat, the Tipperary semi-finals, it's going to be Killadangan, Loughmore, Castellini County final, the very same as last year. I'm calling it now.
I'd say Thurles Arsfields will have something to say about that now. They've been in flying form this year. Like, even their second team got all the way to the quarterfinals in the Senior B, and the Senior A, their first team, they've been beaten all around them really so far, and they kind of seem to be showing the sort of spark of old in Thurles without really having too many new players. But like, yeah, you probably would expect that'll be a very good game now, Killadangan and Thurles. It'll be worth keeping an eye on. And Loughmore and Bursalee, Loughmore will be favourites because they're coming in such good form, like having beaten Killer One fairly comfortably the last day out, and with the McGraths in such fine form. And like, but Bursalee, you know, they were in the All-Ireland Club Final only 2 years ago, so like, that'll be tight as well. And looking forward to watching those games for sure.
Yeah, you said Thurles will have something to say about it, not Bursalee, so you're writing off Bursalee, reading between the lines here with you, Niall. So it's going to be Thurles Killadangan 50-50, and Loughmore Castellini are going to beat Bursalee. That's basically what I'm reading into it. I want to talk quickly about Congress. You know, the obsession with Congress is obviously over. We didn't do a show on Monday. 51 support for Plan B. I'm glad I'm talking about it now a week later and not kind of last Saturday or Sunday when you're really kind of, you know, pissed off about it and it's not getting in. 51% vote, almost 51% vote for Plan B. So it won a majority. You know, it was defeated by 16 votes. So where do we go from here, I suppose, is the conversation everybody has to have now. You can't keep talking about mine's better than yours and yours better than mine and this proposal, etc. My opinion on where we go from here is you have to use what's there and change it a little bit. Because like I said, we have 51% support. If you go back in with another proposal and something completely new, you're risking losing a lot of that 50. I'd like to start from 51 and gain 9%, then go back, you know, completely open to maybe getting 45% the next time and alienating other counties. I think the big one is you need to win over Mayo and Kerry, who are a disgrace as far as I'm concerned, to think trying to feather their own nests. And Mayo, let's be honest, Mayo can make an All-Ireland quarterfinal if they just beat Galway or Roscommon a lot of years. And Kerry can get to an All-Ireland quarterfinal just beating Cork. And they would rather take that then go into a championship, you know, that's much, much better for the, you know, majority of counties. I just think that's shocking. And Kerry nearly worse, because Kerry should surely have the confidence that they'll get in the top five. Mayo should have the confidence as well. They're beating All-Ireland finalists the last 2 years. And I just think it's incredible that both counties just thought about their own. And a lot of times you have a situation where Kerry are complaining that they're getting into the All-Ireland quarterfinals undercooked. And then you have the Ulster counties complaining that they're going into the Ulster final too battle-hardened, too many matches, too many, you know, cutthroat matches, and look how easy Kerry have it. And Kerry, who have it too easy, voted against it. And the Ulster counties, who say they have it too hard, voted against it, Lise. Actually, no, I don't, like, I mean, it's just mind-boggling that, you know, that both voted no for different opposing disadvantages of the current system.
Yeah, I know. I was quite surprised at my own reaction by this, because I never really believed that it was going to happen. You know, I mean, especially when the provinces sort of came out and were against it, I was like, this probably isn't going to get the backing it deserves. But I was working on the day when the news came through, and I couldn't get over how angry I actually was. I went straight on, and I didn't write so much an article as it was a rant. You know, it was me just more typing and going, and another thing, you know, and just frantically typing about everything. But hugely, hugely disappointed in Mayo. I think just because, apart from this year, obviously, being a Tyrone man, I was supporting Mayo, you know, all them other years as they were getting through to the finals and everything else. I love the county. I love the place. I love the club football. I always loved how, you know, they conducted themselves and the type of football that they play. But I was just so disappointed when they came out. I don't know why Kerry didn't register with me, but like, when they came out, you know, and were against it, I was just furious, you know, because they have such an easier route to the final and to the semi-finals, quarter-finals, whatever else. And, like, I thought they would be the ones that really want to test themselves, you know, after the hammerings against the likes of Sligo and whatever last year. I mean, words sort of betray me on this one. Like, Niall Morgan said in a GPA meeting, if Dublin were an Ulster, would they have won all of the All-Irelands that they went that they won in recent years? And it's maybe not a great example because they probably actually would have, you know, they were a level above everyone else. Yeah. So, but I think a better question or a better example would have been, would Mayo have reached all the finals if they had to get through Ulster this year? You know, if you know, through Donegal into Connacht and watch them reach a lot more semi-finals and finals. You know, it's just the way it is. There's a huge imbalance here. And the teams who favour from that imbalance actually, you know, still, they want to keep it, even though it's open for everyone to see and everyone can see that what they're doing was an act of, you know, cowardly, really. Because John Horne said before they made the votes that he asked everyone for courage, to vote for courage today. And it was just a characteristic that was hugely missing on the day, and I was just beyond disappointed. I'm getting wound up again.
Well, that's the thing. Mayo chairman Liam Moffat said on the day, it's very difficult to get away from a team sixth in Division 1 denied the chance to compete in the All-Ireland Series. So that's, and the Kerry chairman Tim Murphy also raised concerns about sixth place. The idea that you'd come sixth in Division 1, there's eight teams in Division 1. And if Division 1 teams just forget about every other division, don't worry about it, and you're going into a competition with eight teams, and you can't, if you come in the top five, you qualify from those eight teams. Forget about everything else. They want six to qualify. It doesn't make any sense, regardless of what happens in the other divisions, because you want to make it all relative and you want to give every team a chance to play for Sam. So they need to stop worrying about a Division 4 team making it. If you can't get top five out of eight after seven games, you don't deserve to go any further. And that's it. You just don't deserve it. So, like, I suppose a solution, if we're going to try and find tweaks to bring, because we need to bring Kerry and Mayo on board now. Like, I mean, they have to come on board. They've got a lot of votes. So, like, is the solution to go Division 1A and Division 1B? So this has been mooted kind of beforehand. So you get all the teams in Division 1 and Division 2 and you mix them all together, randomly draw them out. You know, you'll have a mix of Division 1 and 2. You'll have the odd hammering if, you know, a Clare or a Kildare have to, or a Clare or a, you know, a lower Division 2 team. I'm trying to think of an example. It'll come to me. If they have to play, or maybe Derry, if they have to play Dublin and Croke Park, you know, it could be like a 12-point beating. It will fix that sixth place thing because they can't complain about that anymore. It's jumbled around. The problem with that could be, will Division 2 teams go, well, hang on, I preferred it the way it was. Three of us could go through. There's a very good chance none of us will now, because the top eight will be the, potentially, there might be one place up for grabs, Kildare, you know, against the Corks and these ones. It'll go from three to one. So is there a chance you'll alienate this, which you're always trying to work from? How can we get more than 51? And how do we not lose anyone that has voted yes, you know, who are a part of the 51%?
Yeah, like it kind of seems that no matter what is put forward, there's always going to be, you know, as there was there, the Kerry and the Mayo had their grievance. And if you're going with the way you're saying there, where you've the Division 1A and Division 1B mixed, you're kind of risking losing that the votes that you already have, like, and you really don't want to lose those votes, you know, because and it's just, I don't know, it seems a difficult one, especially when you need 60% as well. Like, that's kind of an overwhelming majority. Like, and when you're looking for a change and there's complaints coming from every corner, it's difficult to see where the kind of solution, like, I know we're given solutions, but where it's actually going to come from in Congress, like, you know?
Yeah, well, it's difficult. That'll obviously suit, say, the 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, where the top teams in 2A and 2B also get into play for Sam. That is a potential tweak. They're all talking about these tweaks. It's hard to know what the tweaks are. That might fix the sixth place. It could open up a can of worms with the Division 2 teams. Who knows? But it would be a solution to the Kerry Mayo. They would probably have to come on board. Limerick's another one, massively disappointing. They went against it. It's incredible. I think the Munster Council offices are in Limerick, whether that was, you know, played a part. You know, it's hard to know. The other big problem, obviously, is the Ulster counties. Ulster said no. They all said no and they spoke up on the day. And, like, I mean, talking to people, the Ulster Council made a very, very big push on changing those individual counties' minds, even against the mandate of their players and even against their clubs. They went in hard on it. The Ulster Council really did put huge pressure on the counties, and they all went against them. They have 22 votes plus their Ulster council delegates. So it was a lot of votes to lose. How the hell do we get you guys on board, Lee? Like, I mean, they're like provincial. Is it to incentivise the provinces? We have to make the Ulster Championship more important. We have to give it more, importance in the year. What is that importance? They're worried it's going to be like a pre-season tournament. Do the winners of the Ulster Championship get four home league games in the league championship? Do they get a point head start? Do they get 2 points head start? Do the Ulster champions, Munster, Connacht, Leinster champions be guaranteed a team holiday, just like the All-Ireland champions? You know, that would be something that would make the players want to, you know, take it more seriously. It has to be incentivised. The Ulster counties have to be brought on board. They're the two issues are the sixth place Division 1, Ulster counties. You give me the Ulster solution. You know the Ulster psyche better than me.
Yeah, and the problem with the Ulster psyche is that we're a very stubborn bunch, especially when it comes to the GAA. You know, we like to be heard. I think that is a solution. What they want is a link. They keep talking about this link. There has to be a link between, the All-Ireland series and the provincial title, or in this case, the Ulster title. And I think you just offered the solution there, a point or a 2 point, extra 2 points if you win the title, then that puts you in a very advantageous position. You can maybe afford to not relax in the league, but it gives you that breathing space and stuff, or if you were an underdog team like Cavan were last year and they got to do it, then that gives them a head start in voting for promotion the following year, as well as their championship progression into the Sam Maguire. So to me that's the example, but the problem with it is that they keep coming with problems, and I've never actually heard any solution from their point. I hear Brian McAvoy say there has to be a link, but it's like, but what link? Like, what exactly is it that you want? When you're not being transparent, when you give us something tangible to work with, why is it that those who are saying for change are brought forward solutions? This is change. Proposal B is a really good, it ticks all of these boxes and this is what we should do. And then they say, well, but there's all these problems with it. I don't have any solutions, but these are the issues with it. And, you don't know what to do with that. And then they all came out and said that, that they'll back change. But as vague as you like, but what change? We've just gave you change and you won't take it. So until they come forward and say this is the tweaks specifically. But it is going to be a case of incentivizing them. In terms of the finishing sixth and not getting in, I actually don't understand that at all. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know if it's just not explained correctly, because everyone is in the All-Ireland. They have the opportunity to compete for it at the start of the season.
Yeah.
It's not a league. It's a championship. They're championship games. If you finish sixth, so say you've lost maybe four championship games. And what other structure and what other tournament and what other sport would you lose four championship games and still be in the competition?
Yeah.
So none of that makes any sense to me. So I guess I don't know is the answer.
Yeah. We'll move on from this now, and we'll talk about something else, but a couple of other points on it. I agree with you with the delegates saying they want change. I don't believe them. I think that's a nice little buzzword, and it was a way of running down Proposal B by saying we want change but not this. I don't believe them that they want change. I don't believe them at all. I think they're just saying it. They've no idea what change they want. I think they're more than happy with the way it is. I see other people, Keith Duggan in the Irish Times, I saw Joe Brawley talking about the Jim McGuinness proposal. I think Sean Kelly involved in that as well. I've read that. That proposal was based on a 9-month intercounty season. The intercounty season now is 6 months. Jim McGuinness is a very, very long season. It wouldn't work. It's just very, very hard. The Proposal B fits lovely into 6 months. So McGuinness needs to go back to the drawing board and come back with another one that keeps the provincials, makes them really, really bloody important, plays another championship, keeps the two of them linked. Do that and then come back. And you'd be surprised that Keith Duggan and Joe Brawley promoting a proposal that just doesn't fit into 6 months. It's impossible. So, there's not much else to say on it other than the fixtures review committee is finished now. So they're gone. They've done. They're the ones that came up with plan A and plan B. So they're out. So now is Larry. That was John Horan's kind of project, and that was his committee. Now Larry McCarthy has to take ownership of this now. He says he wants change. He says they're mandated for change. He's to set up a new committee now. So will the new committee use their common sense and say, right, we can't lose the 51. Let's make little changes. Or will they go, we don't like that at all. Let's start again. Who bloody knows now? Because it's a new committee, so we don't know what way this is going to go. I think with a new committee involved, I say there's no chance of it being ready for next February. That it would have to be a special Congress at this stage next year before something would probably be ready to go to Congress again. So anyways, not much more to say about that other than, you know, let's keep our eyes out for this new committee. We're talking about Jewel, Niall, last Thursday. And we're talking about the Douglas only having one Jewel player. And very unusual, you know, to only have the one. They might have had one in the subs as well. But like, I mean, a good few people got in touch with me after that. They said they really liked the chat and people involved with clubs. And they said this is a big problem within their clubs as well, in that when you come out of minor, there is a slight little bit of kind of, not pressure, but there's an expectation to almost choose one or the other. And if at senior level, you know, for sure, it's not really working, you know, to do both. And yes, it is a player's own decision, but they almost feel like this is what's expected of me, you know, like, and we were saying this is terribly sad that this shouldn't be the case at all, that every club should be a dual club. In that, in a way, from speaking to people, a lot of the issues come down to outside managers. In that an outside manager comes into your club, and I would say the very vast majority of outside managers are getting paid. So what's an outside manager going to do who's getting paid? There's a lot of pressure on them to perform. Are they going to want their footballers or hurlers going away, only having them every 1 week every two, and could get injured? Like, it was human nature. I do it myself. I'd probably say, here, look, Jesus, like, say the football team's much stronger than the hurling. Do you want to be going there and getting injured? You know, this is happening behind the scenes all over the country.
Yes, if you want to be a dual club, I think it has to be made clear to the manager that's coming in, like, that this is the story. Like, we are a dual club and you just have to make do with it, like, because it's sort of a, it's a difficult one, because for players, like, there's never going to be, I don't think there's going to be a policy, like, in a club, oh, you can't play one, or it's not going to be official. But there's probably going to be a bit of pressure coming from their managers telling them, you know, like, if one lad is a little bit more into football, he's like, right, well, you have to give up that hurling, you know, like, because that's only taken away from your game, it's taken away from our team, like, so... I don't know, I was looking into it a bit, and it seems to be more kind of the urban clubs seem to kind of...
The ones with a bigger pick, I suppose,
yeah,
that,
exactly,
that can do that.
Because, the like, you take Lochmore, Castellini, Cratlow, they're kind of more rural areas, and should they need everyone that they have, and they need them in both codes. It seems to be kind of a thing in Tipperary as well. I know JK Brackens, they're in the other side of the... that's the Temple Moor club. They're in the other side of the semi-final draw in the Tipperary football with Lochmore. And they were in the Tipperary final 2 years ago in football, and there was 13 players playing both senior hurling and football for them. It's something similar for Lochmore, like, and it's obviously worked for those clubs, but I suppose in somewhere like Douglas, and Lucan Sarsfields are the same, they're in the semi in both hurling and football in Dublin, and they have only one player playing.
They've only one.
I suppose they're such big areas that maybe just there's so many players that are better than lads could be at both, do you know, that they're just
maybe
picking one.
And, like, I mean, I suppose it is a policy at inter-county level in every county, and, you know, clubs tend to follow, managers follow, you know, the example they're being set. So, like, if, you know, Conal Keeney is the last kind of jewel for Dublin, like Kieran Kilkenny, we know these lads, they're having to choose. So does a young lad come up through a club, see that example and go, well, Jesus, I'm not going to, you know, get my maximal potential at club level if I'm going messing with two? I think the whole culture of that needs to change. We mentioned the FINA last week, and they had a policy where you had to choose, and that's gone now. So they had it. It was a Donal Ryan this year playing Jewel, and a few more lads on the bench on both teams. I just think it's very... It does need to be a club policy, I suppose, Lee. And it needs to be a situation where every club player knows, and every manager that comes into the club knows, that we're a dual club and we promote hurling and football completely equally. And no player will ever, you know, be disadvantaged or looked upon in any negative way by any manager that comes in that is hired by this club if he wants to play both. He'll be accommodated. And, you know, that's the policy that should be probably promoted within clubs. Maybe it, you know, it's coming from the top down with clubs maybe not enforcing this enough.
Yeah, it probably is the club's responsibility first and foremost, because even in the hiring process, when they're picking the manager and in the interviews and stuff, you know, they need to make that very clear. You know, like, if you are willing to take this role, this is one of the responsibilities, is looking after these dual players and making sure that, you know, the burnout and availability and everything else is key to that role. And that's something that they need to be aware of before taking the job, you know, instead of just coming in and saying, we want results, we want them any way necessary. Because then that gives the manager full reins to be decisive with, you know, in picking which sport and players based on that. Niall's completely right in that, like, they don't come out with open policies, you know, because they know they'd be like completely dismissed. And then it's more the low key things that managers would say, you know, if a hurler but also played football, he came to the manager and he said, "Why didn't you play me on Saturday?" And then the manager said, "Oh, well, you didn't train on Wednesday."
Yeah.
But that was because it was the day before a hurling match, you know, but he didn't say anything about hurling. He just said that you weren't training, or, you know, and then it's sly and it's subtle. And then he goes to the club and says, "He's not picking me because of hurling, this, that, and the other." But then the manager says, "Look, when I took this role, I had full, you know, autonomy in terms of picking my team and coaching the way I want." And then you're completely at a bypass. So it needs to be done, like you say, beforehand, you know, when the whole selection process of the manager comes in, and deep rooting the culture from the very beginning of the club. And that's from underage all the way up. You know, they have to be encouraged to try out both things. You know, some teams, they do like joint sessions, whether that, you know, in terms of their run, maybe their preseason, and like S&C and things like that, you know, bonding it together, that would help a little bit. But yeah, it's definitely a club culture thing rather than, you know, being outright and banning them as such.
Yeah, so Ratoat is a good example in Meath. They've got about 10 Jewel players. They were in the county final. They won the football. They won the last two footballs, actually, and they were beaten by a point after extra time in the hurling. They train together, you know, and they promote the Jewel club principle, and any manager has to come in and work within that, not the other way around. Probably the best example in the country of, you know, the Jewel player being promoted is Loughmore Castellini, and they're obviously one of Tipperary's, you know, best teams in both football and hurling. They're not kind of suffering because of this policy at all. They currently have the same manager for football and hurling. And I spoke to John McGrath, obviously Tipperary's John McGrath. It's his uncle who is managing both teams. And he explained how it works in Loughmore.
Yeah, I'm not sure how other clubs work it, but I know now it was probably a little bit before my time playing senior with Loughmore, but there was a stage where different management were over the hurling and the football, and it just didn't work. It was decided in the club, like, could be back maybe 15 years ago or around that stage, that there had to be a link between both teams, because, you know, if you have a football, you know, when you're playing it so close together in the hurling and football, each manager is going to want as much time as they can, whereas if it's the same fella, or the same couple of guys involved in both teams, it makes it a lot easier, and there's no arguments, and, you know, it just, that kind of thing just takes away from it and brings the morale down maybe a small bit. So from that point of view, it's terrific the way we've it set up at the minute.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one. And I was reading that sometimes you might start training with hurling and finish up on football. Now, you're probably not doing that now with the matches coming up, you know, thick and fast. You're probably just uniquely one code. But earlier in the year, you mix up a bit of both in the same session.
Yeah. You know, you might do warm up maybe with a couple of hurling drills and then go into a bit of football. And it's funny, I suppose. There are times there you'd be kind of wondering whether you need to bring the hurlies over or what gear you're supposed to bring training. But no, I think we're just so used to it. Like, we're doing it for so long now, and like I said, it's just that something a bit different, and it keeps everything nice and fresh and everyone really interested.
Yeah, well, you're lucky in that nearly the two panels are almost identical, barring the two goalkeepers.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, out of, I think we used 18 in the hurling the other day, and I'd say there's probably maybe three players to add to that for the football. So you're kind of working off about the same, roughly the same 20 guys for both teams. Like, so it is unique, I suppose, that you're not leaving guys out if you're going football training. It's the same lads are doing it all the time. So it helps that way, that there is a huge crossover.
Yeah, great stuff from John there. Like, I mean, I'm not sure I'm promoting this. It's a very, very unique situation in that Loughmore Castellini, almost their entire team plays both. You know, training together for me would maybe, like Lee says, the physical training at the start of the year to have a good big, you know, a lot of players might be in Dublin and you might be only training with 10 or 11 Whereas if you combine the two, you'll have a big panel of players. They're the same club. We're not fighting against each other, lads. We're all friends. We're all the same club. And even in Port Leash, I remember, there was always that little bit of us and them. Are the managers getting on? And one manager might double cross the other manager by getting the lads to train when they weren't meant to. And now there's a tension. And, you know, it's vital the managers get on. It's vital the players get on. The training together, maybe the physical training in January and February, I think can be done together. What Loughmore do is just take to totally new levels by bringing their warming up with hurling. And it doesn't seem to continuing the rest of the session with football. It doesn't seem to affect them. I'm not sure that would work.
Well, I think for that to work, you need to have the one manager managing both teams.
Oh, you'd have to, obviously,
like,
because
you just have that image of the Loughmore training session, like the slitters flying in one direction, football's flying the other.
It's just magical, I would call that.
Absolutely, and isn't it such a great thing, really, that they have going, that it's nearly 2 years now that they've been going, and, when the championship's on, nearly every weekend, they have a match. It's hurling, it's football, it's the same lads involved, and, what a buzz that would kind of create in the area and in that team. I'd say they must have some team spirit, built up from having played so many games together, come through so many battles. And it really is, it's kind of I think I'd really enjoy that sort of a training session. We only play football the odd time we're junior B or whatever, but you'd always enjoy picking up the footballs, and there's nearly a bit more crack or whatever. I'm not sure Loughmore obviously take hurling and football as serious as the other. But sometimes, you're training so much, you might get sick of one code. Isn't it great then to kind of just dive into the other and get going again?
Well, that's the thing. And in championship then, I explained, the week before a football match, you're playing football. Then week for a hurling match, you're playing hurling. I don't know, Lee, is this something that could take off? Again, I'm saying I'm not against it. But look, if a there's football managers and there's hurling managers, but there's also players like John McGrath, Noel McGrath, dual players, Conal Keeney, all those dual players who are both hurling men and football men. Who says they couldn't go into a club and revolutionise the club and have them training together? Is it possible? Or is Loughmore Castellini the most unique situation that can't be repeated?
You did sort of make it sound like a fairy tale, just leathers and footballs been floating about and everyone laughing and joking together. I'd say there'd be a lot more swearing and fighting in the middle of it all too, knowing football or knowing GAA training in general. It definitely is a possibility, but you just need a club that's fully committed to giving both codes the time and effort, And then there's the supporters as well, because if a lot of the cases up in Ulster in particular, unless you're in North Antrim, they only care about football, really. And the fans, they're not going to go out and watch the hurling teams, and they're not going to get behind them, really. And, people aren't going to follow them. So then as a player, you're going to choose to be, into the football, where all the buzz is, where the excitement is and everything else. So there's just a little bit of that. But I think it starts from underage up, from the bottom up, and trying to get that culture changed, encourage both. Or the young children to try both, get used to having both, get used to going to training with the mentality that you'll be, using a stick and you won't be, in a matter of minutes within the training session. I do think it's a class idea, and they're living proof that it can work, and I think other clubs will eventually follow suit, hopefully, because it's quite inspirational, and it's a true Gael sort of story, it is fairy tale stuff, and what the GAA is all about.
It is. It's Slough Nail. It's basically Slough Nail and Loughmore Castellani and these clubs that have gone in, promoted both equally, and look at the results. It's the club's fault a lot of the time. We'll move off this conversation now because it is the club's fault. It's the committee of the club, chairman, secretary. This is a choice they can make, and they can lead the club and tell managers what type of club we are, what we want to achieve, and it's 50-50. And the players then give up that idea. Oh, I better, these are meetings you have. We're a dual club. This is not one and the other. This is, we want both teams to do well. We can make both teams do well. Look at the examples that are out there. And it's up to them, to make that happen. Moving on from that, TJ Reid has been talking about Henry Sheffin. It was after Ballyhale beat James Stevens at the weekend. And he was talking about, he read about it on joe.ie, which I thought was a good one. That's where TJ goes to get his sports news. Fantastic. Why not Sports Joe, actually?
Yeah, well, it was fake news at that rate. So hopefully he's reading the other articles as well.
So basically he said Henry's a dedicated man, committing everything he does. He's up there to win. He's travelling 7 hours round trip. He's going up there to win. Absolutely. Galway have a serious outfit. I think he mentioned Richie O'Neill, who's going with him. So, like, I mean, he's wishing Henry all the best. But obviously, if you're up against them in the league or Leinster, it's a different story then. And I know we talked about Henry already, but you're thinking about that Galway Kilkenny match. Like, I mean, the connection between Henry and the Ballyhale lads, which is massive, and that is that little subplot. Then you have the sideline with Henry versus Cody, and we know in 2014 in Henry's last year, like, Cody dropped Henry. And this is Henry Shefflin now. This is, you know, in the top five greatest players ever played, you know, top scorer in the championship and recently the most All-Irelands ever, the most player of the years ever, etc., etc. He dropped him. And, you know, from the reading Henry's book, you know, he says that they had a great relationship and maybe it was tested in the last year or, you know, or whatever. Let's read between the lines here. Henry's bloody pissed off about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like the Galway and Kilkenny, they've been so close in recent years as well. Like, you know, I'd nearly say that, like, when I was growing up, it was Tip Kilkenny was the best rivalry. But Galway and Kilkenny, like, Limerick are nearly so good that they don't have a direct rival at the moment. But any time Galway and Kilkenny play, they played in 2020. And remember, Richie Hogan got the goal. Sure, Galway were leading the whole way through the game. In 2019, it was one of the best games I was at in Nolan Park that year. Remember, Galway won that one by a point. Like, yeah. It was a sensational game. And they just seemed to be so evenly matched. Like, and when you have this added on now on top of Everton, like, the kind of, do you know, Henry, like, his nephew, his own Cody, he could be playing. Evan Shefflin, his other nephew, he could be playing. And you have all them Ballyhale lads that he managed. And in that interview as well, TJ mentioned that, but in the week before the match, you could run into Henry in the local shop in Ballyhale. Like, and, you know, it's just, yeah, it will be box office when the two of them meet. Like, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great to watch, like, isn't it?
I'm looking forward to it. One thing now, you mentioned Evan Shefflin, because you're a hurling man. He always impresses me as in one of the big players for Ballyhale, but he doesn't get a look in with Kilkenny. Is there a reason that I can't understand for that?
Yeah, well, he's thereabouts, in fairness.
Maybe, great in the air.
Yeah, tremendous in the air, and one of the best strikers you'd see. Like, he scores points from
long
everywhere.
Range ones,
but,
yeah,
maybe lacking a bit of pace, but he's still very young. Like, I think he's only 21 or 22, like, so he has loads of time to make his mark yet, like.
Yeah, one other one, now that we're talking about Kilkenny, is Paddy Deegan. He's getting carried away with himself now. He's put himself on the penalties. Here's a defender who's been converted to full forward. Okay. And he's banging them in, and we're very interested in Paddy Deegan experiment. And I saw him on Monday night there on the TG Cahir highlights. I was like, he's not taking the penalties now as well, right? So, like, he put it wide.
This is Paddy Deegan watch here on the GAR.
I'm obsessed with him.
Yeah. No, I'd say he won't be allowed to take another penalty for the Manu after that one. But in fairness to him, he was back out the field about, because that was,
it looked
that,
like he had a roving role, did it?
It seemed, yeah. He was back in the back line at one stage, but, like, that was a crucial time to miss the penalty, and Tullerone got a point then. But Paddy Deegan scored a brilliant point just a few minutes later as well, so he kind of redeemed himself, in fairness.
Some little bit, because we didn't do a show on Monday. The big news in Dublin is Ballymun Kickhams are knocked out, which is a huge shock. Lucan Sarsfields, like you mentioned, beat them. But almost bigger, well, definitely bigger than that, is St Vincent's have gone down to Senior B. They're beaten by Whitehall Colum Kills. A huge fall from Vincent's. Like, I mean, in a 10-year spell from 08 to 17, I think it was, they won 5 Dublin, 4 Leinsters and 2 All-Irelands. Like, I mean, they were incredible. And I suppose we were talking about Mossy playing corner forward and, like, I mean, you know, still depending on the 39, 40-year-old Connolly not playing, Ger Brennan, our own Ger Brennan, retired. And it just, the fall came very quickly, I suppose, Lee, is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, when you think it was 2017 was the last time they won it. You know, it really wasn't a long time ago at all. We talk a lot about these teams, you know, that come from intermediate to senior and then suddenly they're winning titles and everything else, and these huge, like, you know, rise from the ashes kind of stories, you know, where teams come out of nowhere. But the fall happens just as quick as well, you know. Like, Vincent's, they're seen as the team in Dublin for a long time there, and like, they were just held up in such high regard, and now to be relegated or going down a division is just, you know, it's hard to imagine, because when you picture the big teams in your head, you know, they're right up there with it and all the all-star names. But you sort of did call it earlier in the season, you know, talking about Mossy Quinn, and as good as he is, it is very strange to be relying on someone of his age, you know, to be getting the main scores and everything else. And that it did prove to be a telltale sign that maybe the team coming through just isn't as strong as previous.
Yeah, exactly. Oliver Plunkett's went down to Senior B as well, which is another shock. Not as big as Vincent's. They're a very big team in Dublin for a long time. They never got over the line to win a county title. Another bit of news is that Gary O'Donnell from Galway retired. And like, I mean, this won't send shockwaves around the country or anything like that. But Gary O'Donnell's a bloody good player, but he was so unassuming. It wouldn't have been necessarily, it wouldn't have much flair. Like, he'd still get up for a pint, but there was nothing hugely exciting about the way he played football. Just kind of, you know, a very steady player. And, like, had loads of brilliant games. Captain Galway to a Connacht title in 2017, was it? 2016. He made his debut in 2009. He went the first 7 or 8 years without any Connacht title, which is unusual for Galway. But, like, I mean, I suppose, Lee, when you think of Gary O'Donnell, like, you know, it won't have made headlines, but I would call Gary O'Donnell a very, very underrated player.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you ask, you know, the people of Galway what they think of him, they would throw him in really high esteem as well. And it was a difficult journey. The fact that he had to wait so long for a Connacht title, but it sort of did bring back, we talk a lot about how, like, the provincial titles outside of Ulster don't really mean much, you know, because of the usual teams that win them and stuff. But, like, when Galway did win it in 2016 and, you know, and he got to be a part of that, like, I'm sure that meant the absolute world to him. You know, I mean, he waited so long and he was just such a key part of that journey and finally for him to get over the line in that sense. But because it's, like, diminished as a title in elsewhere and how we view it, you know, he maybe isn't remembered in the same regard. But, like I say, in the county, I reckon that... you know, he'll be missed definitely and that they think the world of him.
Yeah, that's it. Before Galway won it, you'd probably say the Connacht title was dead because Mayo had won 5 in a row and, you know, maybe it kind of got the boost when Galway and Roscommon started winning them after 2016. But he's played under 6 different Galway managers in his time. Liam Salmon, Thomas O'Flaherty, who managed Laois as well, Alan Mulholland, remember, then Kevin Walsh came in, Pádraig Joyce, and I had forgotten about this, Joe Kernan. In 2009, I'd forgotten completely about Joe Kernan managing Galway, and this was a huge deal at the time because Galway were kind of underachieving a little bit. Joe Kernan going in after winning an All-Ireland with Armagh, there was huge expectations on this appointment, and it made huge headlines at the time, and it didn't go according to plan at all. They lost to Sligo in the Connacht Championship. No huge shame in that, because Sligo had beaten Mayo in the round before, and they only lost the final to Roscommon by a point. I don't know where Sligo came out of that year. I think Mark Brettany was on fire, and then they lost in the qualifiers to Wexford, and then the Galway County Board wanted Joe Kernan to change his backroom team. Joe Kernan didn't want to change his backroom team, so Joe Kernan says, "Look, I'm out." So we never really saw the best of Joe Kernan with Galway. You know, it's just a bit of a disastrous first year. Nicky Joyce was injured for the championship. Michael Meehan was injured for the championship, and then he's out. Do you know? And he's out kind of almost like, what a disastrous year for Galway. You know, without, you'd love to have seen him getting another year to show the, you know, a proper picture maybe, I suppose now.
Yeah, like I wouldn't have even have remembered that Joe Kernan was the Galway manager. Like, it was just, I suppose it went so quick, and maybe it kind of, maybe he was just there at the wrong time, like as you said, with injuries, and Galway just weren't going as well at the time, and probably just needed another year, like, for it to really kind of, I suppose, make a bit of headway there. And but yeah, like Gary O'Donnell, like he was just such an kind of an underrated player, like, and but he was always there, wasn't he? And you kind of,
yeah,
he wouldn't have made the headlines, but he was always there, wing back, kind of leading that Galway team.
But
on,
even if he was man of the match and he scored 2 points, he wouldn't make the headlines. Something else, you know, someone else would have made it. Gary Donald was not a headline maker. Do you know what I mean? Some players are just like that. They're not, don't know, maybe it's just the way they play. It's not majorly exciting. I don't want to be too, you know, disrespectful to him either.
Yeah, and he's like, he was a good wing back, really, and is solid,
very good,
and
yeah,
is steady, and you'd see him coming up the field the whole time, and I don't know, it just didn't make the headlines for one reason or another, but I'm sure everyone in Galway and everyone that follow Galway football will sort of really appreciate and have remembered what he did for them.
Yeah, coming back, when I was playing, I'd only have to have one good game and I'd make all the headlines. And then, you know, you mightn't be good in other ones, but there's some players that when they play well, I don't know what it is, or maybe I'm just talking complete nonsense. Refereeing decisions last weekend, Lee, there was two interesting ones. There was a Paddy McBrearty one, and obviously the Kilcar-Glenties match. You know, we tried to build it up here. It was an awful match to watch. It was boring. I dozed off for a part of it, which is a terrible thing to say. Yeah, so there was a obviously the goal at the end, the Paddy McBrearty goal, a ball in from Michael Hegarty, which he came on as a sub. Funny enough, I played against Michael Hegarty in 1996 minor. That'll put him 43 years of age, and he's still togging out for Kilcar and coming on in a county semi-final. But the referee got this right, Lee. Like, I mean, the important thing here is that if that ball was kicked in by Michael from play, that goal would have been allowed. But the fact it was a set play, you cannot be in the square before the ball from a set play. You can in normal play.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, apart from the result, you knew what you were going to get when it came to that game. It's weird how like predictable it was, but that didn't mean you knew who was going to win. You knew it was going to be a really cagey affair. You knew that it was going to be very, very tense. You knew at large parts there'll be spells where it was quite boring because of the, you know, they're both steeped in like defensive sort of football structure. It's just the way they do it. But you always knew that it was going to go to the wire. And with 3 points to go, a free kick comes in late. Paddy McBrearty gets a hand to it. You know, the man of the moment, you know, he did it against Derry for Donegal. He's always there till a get out of jail card, like come with the hour, come with the man. And then the referee, in fairness to him and the linesman, who were very brave, you know, they called it like they seen it. They knew that, especially because of all the chaos and the controversy that happened the last time these two played in the 2020 final. They knew that they were going to be under serious heat if they got it wrong, but they stuck to their guns because, yeah, from a set play, you're not allowed to stand in the square. And, you know, we were afforded the luxury of a replay. And when we seen it, you know, he was in the square, whatever way you wanted to see it. And like, I'm from a neutral because to me, that was the game finally getting good. You know, oh, stick it in, let's see extra time here, you know, when they've opened up a little and everything's going balls to the walls, as it were. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you just, they don't get a lot of praise, but you got to just hold your hands up and say fair play to them because it was a very brave move, but it was more importantly the correct move.
Yeah, no, it definitely was the correct move. The other one then was the Dermot O'Connor penalty in the Ballintubber Knockmore game. So you'd say the penalty was soft enough. Dermot O'Connor at that time had to try and, you know, win it. Time was ticking down. There were 2 points down. Wasn't much in it. Like, he could have tried to battle past the Knockmore player and not got anything. I think he played for the penalty and got it, right? So, you know, the penalty's taken and it's saved. Or no, he wasn't playing for the penalty. He played for the free. And got the free. Sorry, I'm wrong. And then took the free, and it was a 14 yard free. And the Knockmore players lined up along the goals, as you'd see always. All the players going along the goals. Such an important time. There's obviously not enough room on the line for all 14 players standing shoulder to shoulder, Niall. So some players have to stand slightly out from others. Like, there's nearly too many players back, and the referee blew this free Dermot O'Connor took for a penalty. Now, you'd say it's a very, very harsh penalty. Technically, they're not under line. Like, is the message to go to teams in hurling and football now? I'm not sure if the same rule is in hurling. Is instead of putting 14 players on the line, you have to put, at least hurlers do stand back on the line more in a straight line. Maybe the goalie kind of rushes out in front of them and tries to, you know, save it first. But you can't put 14 men back on the line because they can't all fit on the line. Now, this referee is very finicky, you'd have to say.
Yeah, because it seemed like the referee was ready to give that penalty like before the 14-yard free was even taken. Like, Dermot O'Connor just hit it and he had the whistle blown straight away. Like,
right. Like
whether he didn't tell the
maybe
boys,
he warned them to...
Yeah, well, like, you'd nearly want to have warned them because, like, it was... Like, when there's 14 lads there, they're obviously going to encroach a little bit because there's just not enough space. Like, I'd say it'd have been better if they put maybe 8 or 9 lads back and see what happens.
Should
then.
Should be enough. Because you're desperate free from Dermot anyways. He probably just kicked it down the middle. You didn't need to do that. I think it was the sub-goalkeeper that saved it, Ryan McDonald. Now, Ryan McDonald came on in the middle of the second half. And I don't know, when you have to laugh at stuff like this, I don't know what I have, but like, generally, if you're on the field at club level, more than any other, like not inter-county or anything like that, but at club level, if you're on the field and your goalie gets injured and you see your sub-goalkeeper running on the field, usually you're going, ah, Jesus. You're usually thinking, what could happen here? You know, because generally sub-goalies at club level aren't great. And you'd be more worried that they could do something stupid and lose you the match rather than like Ryan McDonald, who comes on, saves the free from Dermot O'Connor and then saves the penalty.
Yeah, well, the thing is, he could be their like second team's goalkeeper, do you know? and he was just brought on because the other goalkeeper was injured. But I'd say if that's the case, the second team, they'd be raging, you know, that they're down a good goalkeeper now, because he did play well. Like, and from the minute he came on, his kickouts were brilliant, and there was a few balls that went in there, and especially, you know, at such a kind of tense part of the game, I thought he stood up well. And
he could be the minor goalkeeper or something. He's not quite ready yet. You know, I'm not. There are exceptions to this theory, but in general, at club level, the sub goalie is useless.
It's,
am I right?
It's not the most glamorous position, in fairness, a sub goalie on a club team.
No, he's flying the flag. He's inspiring sub goalies all over the country. Lee Ryan McDonald single-handedly. Not only did he sit on the bench that day with no kind of hope of ever getting on the field. Number two, he comes on hoping he doesn't make a balls of it. Number three, he comes on and is the hero. And number four is on TG Cahir for the whole country to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely impressive, isn't it? You made the point there, he could be the minor goalkeeper. I didn't get his age, but I did think that he looked very young. So and after seeing him perform, my thinking was that they know they have a good goalkeeper on his hands. Yeah. He's just young, maybe not ready yet. But, you know, ready he is, because, like, what's super impressive is then, as you say, none of this would have been premeditated. You know, not that you could premeditate something as outrageous as that ending, but the fact, was he even really visualising being on the pitch? He was probably on the bench for the last couple of matches and all of the league and whatever else.
Lee,
get used to that routine.
Lee, sub goalkeepers at club level aren't into visualisation. I'd wager.
Probably not. No, they're just there. Well, if he is, I'd love him to come out and say that he was, just to prove everyone wrong. he sort of willed this into happening. But no, I mean, it's the stuff of fairy tales. And then it had to be Dermot O'Connor, you know, that took the penalty, like a Mayo hero earlier on in this year, you know, against Dublin. He would have watched him on TV, and to think that, like, you know, he'll be saving his penalty, you know, to take his club to the next round of the championship. And, like, all of the fans and all of the players, they instantly flooded towards him afterwards. And he's a big, tall fella, and, you know, he's leaning down over, hugging everyone, and he's got a big blush face. He couldn't hold it in. You know, it's just lovely to see. And one of the better stories to come out of the GA.
Yeah, Killian O'Connor, obviously the big loss there for Ballintubber, not being able to take that. I feel I can say these things about sub-goalkeepers. I was sub-goalkeeper on my school team. It really, really pissed me off in secondary school. I was 16 at this stage. And I was sub goalkeeper on the school team. Like, I mean, it was embarrassing. I hated it. And I was a useless goalkeeper. So I don't have any problem talking about sub goalkeepers being useless, because I have been there. I know what it's like. One other story, lads, is Nace. They're proving here, we're talking a lot about managers and the power of managers. They're proving single-handedly that it's all a load of bullshit now. We don't, who needs a manager?
Yeah, if there's any, like, club boards that are a little bit stingy or missing out on a bit of money, they'll just be like, lads, you sure you don't need a manager? Look at Nace over there.
No, get him in for half the year. What's your fee? We'll give you half. Get you in until the end of April.
I'd say the two of you there, you can take over the team, like Gay McCallaghan and Owen Doyle. But it's a brilliant story, isn't it? Like, and I'd say there must be a great sort of a bond in the whole team at this stage. Like, the way they're, it's kind of, whatever it is, it's a bit of a siege mentality now, and they're going for their first county title since, I think it's 1991. Like, yeah. So, you know, you'd just be keeping an eye on them and sort of hoping that they do the job. And sure, Eamon Callaghan, he's doing the job, isn't he?
Yeah, he definitely is. I don't know what Eamon Callaghan's skin care kind of routine is, Lee, but the man doesn't look 39. He scored 6 points. He still looks like he's 25.
Yeah, well, managing hasn't aged him yet anyway. It's only been 1 year, so far so good. Yeah, I'm wondering if, like, not having a manager, or the way that this manager walked out on them, I know we don't know the ins and outs, but it sort of takes the pressure off a little bit, because, you know, if they don't reach the final, or I know they did, or if they lose the final even, they could say, well, like, you know, our manager walked out and look how brilliant we did even without him. So there's already sort of a scapegoat there, but it's definitely, you would imagine, brings the squad together, the team together, and like invites that kind of siege mentality and stuff. And this story will come out. Like, when it's over, we will know the reason why he left, and, you know, and they'll talk about it in the interviews and everything afterwards. So, like, all eyes are on Nace. You know, it's kind of worked out to be, like, you wouldn't imagine that there could be a better way to win a championship, you know, or an extra added bonus, because, you know, they haven't done it in, like, was it nearly 30 years or whatever. So it's going to be huge regardless. So, but just this little added benefit, if they were to get over that line, it'll make it stand out in history, not just in their own county in Kildare, but in the rest of Ireland, you know, because we're all talking about it now. So I'm hugely fascinated by it, and I really hope they do it.
Yeah, there'll be underdogs obviously going into play Sarsfields. There's Naas versus Newbridge, which is a nice kind of, I'm sure there has to be. I haven't looked into this. It's usually Moorfield Newbridge versus Sarsfields Newbridge, the big kind of town rivalry. But surely two big towns like Naas and Newbridge, obviously Naas have gone away, but there has to be a rivalry there. We can look into it for the final. Obviously to play Sarsfields, and I was saw a picture of Sarsfields, and it reminded me of how much I love the Sarsfields jersey. It's green with a white sash. And sash jerseys are massively underrated as far as I'm concerned. I think they're the coolest jerseys. They're old school. I absolutely love them. And then I was watching TG Cahir the other night and I saw Tullerone in the green jersey and the white sash. I was like, do they have the exact same jersey? What's going on here? And it's because they were playing a Lachlan Gaels, you were telling me. Like, you know, it didn't really look Tullerone. They're usually white jersey with the green sash, which isn't as nice as the green jersey with the white sash. No, discuss.
The green jersey with the white sash is lovely, wasn't
beautiful.
It?
Beautiful.
And I think this is a section of the show that we need to finish the show on every week, the jersey section.
Yeah, because there is.
But Tullerone's nickname, I think, they're known as the sash. Like, that's their nickname. So it's obviously kind of a big thing for them, like, and it makes for a lovely jersey, doesn't it?
It definitely does. Like, there's no doubt. Like, I'm thinking of the River Plate jersey. Like, I love that. It's a sash. A sash is absolutely class. I didn't know Tullerone's nickname was the sash. I'm trying to think, like, you know that, like, the Leash jersey, the blue white or the white blue white. Most intercounties are that style. It's terribly boring. Like, give me the Kilkenny bloody, you know, stripey one any day of the week.
You need to get onto O'Neill's and get onto their designing team or something. But yeah, there is no, I don't think there is any sash in the intercounty.
No sash at intercounty level.
Big loss.
It's actually a disgrace, Lee.
Yeah, listen, I'm from the north, so it'll be quite controversial if sashes were put onto a lot of jerseys up here. It'll either be controversial or it'll be all-inclusive, depends what way you market it. So there's not too many teams up here with a sash, but yeah, I'm all for changing the jerseys and stuff. I mean, earlier on, well, it would have been last year, our club, we were looking training jerseys. So they put it to the players to have a vote, and they put in all these examples and everything else. And all the players had a vote with some like SurveyMonkey or something like that in an app. And it just caused chaos in the group chat. And people like refused to buy the jersey because it's not the one they voted for. Or people who would wear it are like, I can't believe you even got that. Or why are you voting for the white one? You know, we shouldn't be getting that. And it just caused chaos. And I don't think we'll ever do it again. I don't know if that's, maybe that's just our own club, but
no,
got there in the end. I like the jersey.
I would say that's every club in the entire country. And maybe that's why we love this alternative Dublin jersey, because like Argentina, and we just don't see an intercounty jersey, you know, with a different style. I'm saying bring in the sash, bring in Argentina style, and let's mix up these jerseys. Anyways, I've run out of things to give out about when I've moved on to jerseys. We'll leave it there, lads, because we don't know what direction we're going to go. We'll be back with Mickey Graham. He's coming up next. So there's a very unique situation happening on the Longford Cavan border this Sunday week. We have Mullinahakta in the Longford County Final, and we have Gauna, who are in the Cavan County Final. Mullinahakta and Gauna are in the same parish, but playing different finals in different counties on the same day at the same time. So we have Cavan manager Mickey Graham, who's back coaching Mullinahakta this year. He joins us on the line now. How's it going, Mickey?
Good, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Kind of a unique situation here, Mickey.
Yeah, it is. It is, I suppose, one parish and two teams contesting two county finals in two different counties. It is a unique situation that both clubs find themselves in, all right. Yeah, and look, it is a special occasion as well for both of them.
Well, what's the relationship like between the two clubs?
Yeah, both of them would get on very well. Mullinahakta would do a lot of their socialising probably in Gowna as well. And I know after games, they would go to the local hotel in Gowna for their food afterwards and breakfast after training sessions at the weekends. And so, you know, they'd be interacting an awful lot together with the Gowners. So there'd be a lot of big friendships there between both of them.
Right. So I presume that hotel you like to go to is going to be booked out. You're going to have to find an alternative arrangement.
It's looking like that. I know that down through the years, Mullinahakta have always gone back there after big games to have food, and probably Gowan has been the same, so it'll be an arm wrestle now to try and get in there after the game. But hopefully they'll have something to celebrate both clubs on, at, you know, when it comes to the final whistle.
We have a similar situation in Laois in Port Harlington. You have Gracefield and Port Harlington separated. They're both in the town of Port Harlington, but separated by a river. But Gracefield is in Offaly, and Port Harlington's obviously in Laois. But there'll be a big enough rivalry there, because Offaly and Laois are rivals at county level. You know, you don't have that at all with Longford and Cavan, because they're in completely different provinces, probably, which makes it that bit more unique.
Yeah, probably that's probably true. There wouldn't be a huge rivalry between Longford and Cavan. It'd be more respectful rivalry between them. We wouldn't have met each other too often, only maybe a odd league game down through the years. So, no, there wouldn't be that huge rivalry at all, as both clubs, you know, as I said, are playing in different counties, and both clubs would be monitoring each other down through the years and probably keeping a close eye on each other, see how they're getting on. So, yeah, look, while there might be a small bit of rivalry there, you know, but I don't think it's major.
Right. Is that like, when did you go? You were just back this year with Mullinocht on a coaching basis, is that right?
Yeah, look, Justin, Kieran Fox is the manager of Mullinocht, and he just asked for a help, just a bit of coaching during the weekend. So, look, there was a bit of free time there, midweek there for a few weeks. So I was off doing nothing. And then, obviously, you get the bug back again to try and get your hands dirty and get back into the coaching game. And I'm enjoying that end of things at the moment.
Yeah, so you had a boring summer, really, after, you know, the early exit and the knockout championship the way it was. This year is unusual for you.
Yeah, it was. Look, as I said, usually you'd be, you know, your whole summer, well, most of your summer would be taken up with football, but this year we were kind of beaten early in the season, so it was a long summer, and there's only so much the missus can take of you being around the house before she kicks you out the door.
Yeah, she did the connection with Mullinocht and got you back in coaching there above your head. Come here, listen, Mullinocht is a funny situation. Since you won the Leinster when you were manager, you'd won three in a row. They haven't been back to the final since. You know, so they're obviously in a post huge win lull, and you know, obviously Cavan are going through that a little bit as well. Like, I mean, are there parallels here?
I don't know about that. As the fella says, you have to take the good with the bad sometimes, and unfortunately in football you get more bad days than good days. But yeah, Mullinocht had a great run of it there for 3 years, you know, and they won three senior championships and obviously the Leinster club in 2018, and it probably took its toll on them those 3 years. There were three long seasons, and then obviously the following year there was a bit of a lull, maybe just lost a wee bit of their appetite, and I know that they had a number of injuries as well, because they had small numbers, that, you know, any few injuries at all would have a major impact on the team itself, because they would be limited as regards numbers. They'd only have about 23-24 players available at most times. So you know, I suppose that probably took its toll, and, you know, probably lost a wee bit of their hunger, but they seem to have got it back now this year, which is good to see.
And, like, I mean, considering that analysis then for Cavan, do you think after winning the Ulster, you know, first time since 97, that it blunted the hunger a little bit?
Yeah, look, I think the major thing with Cavan was, you know, the league was meant, we finished up our All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin in early December, and you know, obviously after that, you were probably starting to plan for the National League start in February. So you had a wee bit of momentum built up, and the lads were looking forward to getting back, straight back at it. And then obviously that was put on hold because of COVID, and it was pushed back till May. And it probably just knocked a wee bit of edge out of us and broke our momentum. And then obviously lads were back with the clubs, and all of a sudden we started to pick up injuries at the wrong time. So it probably didn't help us that there was a long break after that All-Ireland semi-final, because we felt that, you know, we were in a good place after that, and it was about trying to build on it. But unfortunately, with the delay then, it kind of probably knocked us back a small bit and broke the momentum which we felt we had built up at that stage.
Right, okay, so I suppose that's it. Like, I was thinking that these things are almost impossible to fight. You can talk about them and you can try and get back the year after, but I suppose, you know, that kind of raw hunger, you know, whether that you can maintain that after reaching the top of the mountain, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like anything else, you know, any team that's trying to get to that pinnacle and win that elusive championship, whether it's club or whether it's Ulster championship, whether it's an All-Ireland, you know, when you finally arrive, you know, it's great relief to everybody involved. And then, you know, you do have the question, does the hunger still be the same the following year? And anybody that has won championships for the first time after a long period will tell you you know, it's not. That, you know, no matter what you tell yourself, is the hunger still there? Yes, the hunger is still there and the desire is still there. But is it that, you know, real relentless hunger to how badly you want this? Sometimes it does win, and then sometimes you'd find that a team the following year might go out and not do anything, and then the year after that they'll come back with that renewed hunger. So definitely, you know, it does have an effect on a team that has been trying for so long to make the breakthrough. When they do, you know, maybe that hunger just wanes a small bit the second year round.
Yeah, so it's a unique champ. Well, it's not really a unique championship next year. We're going back to pre-Super 8s. So, like, having have to make the provincial final, or it looks like you'll be in the Tailteann Cup. Have you thought a lot about that?
Yeah, look, it probably, from a player's point of view, it's probably disappointing that Proposal B was defeated. I think that, you know, the thing that was being missed here is that, you know, out of all the players that had been, you know, maybe surveyed about, you know, what their favourable option was, Proposal B was the one that most of the players were in favour for, and I think they were looking just for change, just to freshen their appetite for it. So I think from that point of view, it's disappointing that it didn't go through. I don't think this has gone away. I think we're going to be back here in the same position next year again, because at the end of the day, the players are the major stakeholders in this, and I don't think their voice was listened to be honest with you, which is disappointing.
Well, so that's the thing. What input did G have it and the players? Because obviously, like, it looks all the Ulster Congress delegates spoke against Plan B, and it looked like Ulster had made the decision. Apparently they, you know, were in consultation with the Ulster Council, who were vehemently against this. You know, they wanted to protect the Ulster Championship. Like, you know, how much input as a playing group and a management would you have had, you know, with your Congress delegates?
Yeah, well, look, at all we could, you know, as a management and players, is voice our opinion and, you know, watch what we were, you know, what we were in favour for. And after that, you know, you have to leave it up to the clubs and the county board to make the decision. And I think that was the case in a lot of the counties in Ulster, that the players probably voiced their opinion, but maybe club delegates and county boards had different views on it. And, you know, I suppose I can also understand where the Ulster council are coming from. You know, the Ulster Championship is a unique championship. It's very competitive, and on any day, any team can beat each other. So, you know, taking away that competitiveness would probably, you know, lessen the, you know, the Ulster Championship's value. So I can understand where they were coming from. But as I said, you know, I think a change is inevitable. You know, it hasn't happened for next season, but I don't think it's going to be too far away.
How do you think? Do you think it would have been affected? Like, I think it's probably fairly obvious it would be affected a bit. But do you think if, say, if an All-Ireland final was in July, and there's a split season with the club, so there's no winter county from the end of July on, and then you start the year with the Ulster Championship starting in February, Do you think people will be craving intercounty again? Ulster people are very passionate about their football. The edge might be taken off it a bit, but would you see it being devalued hugely?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know how teams would approach it. You know, the Ulster Championship, as I said, is a special competition. But yeah, I think the hunger would have been there for those games. You know, inter-county footballers, I suppose, want to be playing as many games as possible in the height of summer. And I think that's, you know, that's fair to say that's what most players would like. And you look at maybe the top teams that go on till the middle of August or the end of August every year, they're probably, you know, an average over 5 years, they're probably getting 15 to 20 games more than, you know, the teams that are knocked out at the early stages. So they're getting more development. They're playing together for longer. They're playing against better opposition. And, you know, and because of that, you know, they're developing at a more steady rate than maybe the lesser counties. So I think that, you know, if counties could play as many games as possible during the summer, the same amount of games, and money be behind the other top counties, two or three, say All-Ireland semi-final, final, I think it'd be great in the development of the lesser counties. But I think it's something that will have to be looked at again, and maybe a few tweaks maybe to make it more attractive as well.
Yeah, make it more attractive to the Ulster delegates, I think, is very, very important. Like, I mean, talking about lesser counties, like, unfortunately, Mickey, you're in that group now. You're in Division 4. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. Laois have gone down into it. Derry have gone into it. Westmeath have gone into it. And they've all come out and gone. Laois went straight back to Division 2. I think Derry and Westmeath took, you know, 2 years to get back to Division 2. So, like, I mean, it's not, like, you know, it's not an impossible thing. It's just, it's not an ideal situation either, I suppose.
No, it's not an ideal situation. And I suppose with the league format last year, we would have started the league campaign with a lot of key players out through injury. And you only had 3 games basically after the lockdown to get yourself up to speed. And because of injuries and then, you know, only going in with maybe 1 challenge game under your belt, we were a wee bit flat going into it and we paid the price. And we have to just take it on the chin and accept it now. No point looking back and dwelling on it. And so it'll be just rolling up the sleeves now when we get back and getting the head down and working hard. And, you know, league football, it's winter football as well. And there's no easy games. Every team in the league, especially down Division 3 and 4, will be looking to try and move up the ladder to try and get up and compete for the Sam Maguire, as you said. And it puts more emphasis on the league now, especially Division 3 and Division 4 and also Division 2, because anybody in Division 2 doesn't want to drop down the tree because that puts them in the Tatchin Cup. So it just makes that league a wee bit more competitive now moving forward.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I know from even Laois being in it, there's going to be savage pressure on every game in that Division 4, because, you know, just to get out of it. It's played in terrible conditions. You'll have the worst referees, no offence to the referees, but they are probably tiered as well. And, you know, you'll be going to grounds you're not used to, and Tipperary are in it. And I'm not trying to build up a terrible scenario, but there will be an awful lot of pressure on every single one of those games. There's not much margin for error if you want to get out.
No, and it's all about momentum and it's all about consistency and, you know, a wee bit of luck with injuries, you're right. As I said, as a player, I remember being down in Division 3 and, you know, it took us a lot of years to get out of there. And, you know, you do have to roll up your sleeves and you do have to grind out results. As the fella says, go into the trenches sometimes and just, you know, just grind it out. And that's what it's going to take. And, you know, you're just going to have to, you know, work hard at it. And as I said, you know, every team will be fancying their chances and will be gung-ho for the league to try and get up those divisions. You know, they're trying to play better against better opposition.
Yeah, exactly. What about Darren McVitie? Conor Mina came back obviously for last year. Has he stayed home or any sign of McVitie coming back?
No, as far as I know, Darren's still working over there. He's a good job over there at the moment and he's happy out. So at this moment in time, he's still in Australia. Connor's is still home. Connor's working at home at the moment as well. So he's around.
Right, so you'll have a clean bit. You kind of have everybody back bar Darren then.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, hopefully, now. And, you know, the club season's coming to an end, so you'd be just hoping that there's no major injuries now. As you know, the physios, they'll be flat out come November after club season, you know, lads playing through, you know, small injuries and making them worse. So, you know, you'd be hoping that, you know, there's not too many major worries now in the next couple of weeks when we start assessing lads before we start back the pre-season.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, we were talking about Gauna at the start. Has Dermot McCabe left the backroom team?
Yeah, Dermot has stepped away because he has other commitments, and he's involved with Gauna along with Fintan Riley at the moment. And, you know, in fairness to them, they're doing a great job there. They're back. Gauna's back in the final since the first time since 2007. You know, they would have been one of the kingpins in the 90s there. They won 7 or 8 championships there in the 90s, and their last title was in 2002. So, you know, they've been doing a lot of work at underage through the years, and they're starting to see the fruits of it now. So, you know, them and Ramo, which will be the makings of a good county final. Hopefully, last year's county final was an excellent game. It was on RT Live, and it was one of the best games on the television last summer. So hopefully, this game lives up to that expectation.
Yeah, I don't know what's in the water on Mullinocta and Gauna and these places. Mullinocta, as we know, about 450 people, and Gauna's only 700. Like, I mean, I don't know how to do it. They're in different provinces, but like small little villages and towns, you know, batting above their weight.
Yeah, look, both parishes would be very tight, knit community, and, you know, there would be a lot of football mad families in both parishes. You know, in Mullinocta, 4 or 5 families would make up the team, and no more than in Gauna, 4 or 5 families would make up most of the players there as well. So that probably brings that continuity and that togetherness together. So, and plus, they have good people involved with the club that has put in an awful lot of work at underage level, which is hugely important. And in fairness, both clubs are seeing the fruit of that now this last while.
Yeah, they definitely have. Well, come here, listen, best of luck Sunday week and best of luck getting out of that Division 4. I'm sure you will, Mickey. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem, Colin. Nice talking to you. Good man.
Great stuff from Mickey there. Again, that game is on Sunday week. We're not previewing it for this Sunday in case you're looking out for it. Right, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday. We'll review all the club action from the weekend. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.